From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. The hashtag MeToo moment that burst into national consciousness with the revelations of Harvey Weinstein's sexual assaults and rapes has a new high-profile target, Aziz Ansari, the acclaimed comedian turned actor and screenwriter who became the first Asian-American to win the Best Actor Award at the Golden Globes just over a week ago. The feminist website Babe.net published a lengthy expose over the weekend from the perspective of an unnamed woman who went on a date with Ansari last year and left his home that night in tears. Writer Katie Way explained that the woman she interviewed, who goes by the pseudonym Grace, quote, used verbal and nonverbal cues to indicate how uncomfortable and distressed she was, end of quote, during her sexual encounter with Aziz. Grace told Way, quote, I believe that I was taken advantage of by Aziz. I was not listened to and ignored. It was by far the worst experience with a man I've ever had. The article has generated a tremendous amount of debate among South Asians who are proud of Ansari's achievements, as well as among feminists and progressives about whether the story of what he did fits into the category of sexual assault. Some, like Caitlin Flanagan writing in The Atlantic, came to Ansari's defense. Others have asserted that the woman's experience was actually quite common, indicating that a deep problem exists in our sexual culture. My guest is Deepa Iyer. She is a South Asian American activist who works and writes on race, immigration, and the post-9/11 backlash. Her first book is called We Too Sing America. She hosts a monthly podcast called Solidarity Is This. She had a powerful Facebook response to this issue. Welcome to the program, Deepa.
Thanks, Sonali.
Thanks so much for joining us. So what was your reaction, you know, before all of the controversy around it, to the article itself, just on its own? My first exposure to what happened was the Caitlin Flanagan article, and then I stopped and I went back and read the original piece on Babe.net, and I have to admit, I was left just feeling really deeply disturbed, kind of wishing I had, you know, when you want to sort of unsee something disturbing, I was wishing I had unread that. What was your initial reaction to the original piece?
Well, when I read the original piece, and I read that first, I think on the night that it probably broke, I felt also disturbed. I felt also that there were aspects to what Grace recounted that seemed very familiar. And I think that a lot of people are reacting to that. There is something about this particular encounter that in many ways feels familiar. It feels like situations that many women and men have faced. And it brings up, as you mentioned, this opportunity to have a deeper conversation about the gray areas around coercion, consent, around the messages that men get around sexual entitlement. And that, I think, is the set of conversations and dialogue we should be having. But I feel that the conversations are being derailed by a lot of distracting rhetoric and narratives that we've been seeing in social media and in articles.
So how important is it to ask the question, was this sexual assault? Because that seems to be what's consuming the debate. This was sexual assault. No, it wasn't sexual assault. She said that she stayed. When she said no, he backed off, et cetera, et cetera. She could have left at any point, and then she finally did. How important is just that question, is this sexual assault?
Well, I think that it's important to remember that there are going to be encounters and episodes that don't necessarily fit this sense of legal versus not legal. You know, we have gotten to the point where it has to rise to the level of what Harvey Weinstein and company have done in order for us to have empathy or feel concerned or be reflective or have open dialogues. And so I think this scrutinizing of, well, what should Grace have done? Why did she stay so long? Why couldn't she have called the cab? What was her agency? These questions and then the other questions around the reputational harm to Aziz Ansari seem to be the two sets of conversations that people are having. But I think what we need to actually talk about is around coercion, consent, the sexual entitlement, the messages that men get, what are the ways in which women express agency, right? Those are the dialogues that we actually need to be having, but we're being derailed by these questions of what should she have done? Well, if it wasn't legally sexual assault, does it really matter? Is it derailing the movement? Those are the questions that I think are very distracting and derailing to the conversations we should be having.
Right. I want to quote from the piece that Caitlin Flanagan wrote, The Humiliation of Aziz Ansari, and she brings up an issue that's also coming up from some South Asians who are thinking, you know, basically, like, how come you're raining on our brown parade, right? And this is what Caitlin wrote. She said, I thought it would take a little longer for the hit squad of privileged young white women to open fire on brown-skinned men. I think she might be assuming that Grace is a white woman here, by the way. And she writes, I had assumed that on the basis of intersectionality and all that, they'd stay laser focused on college-educated white men for another few months. But we're at warp speed now, and the revolution, in many ways so good and so important, is starting to sweep up all sorts of people into its conflagration, the monstrous, the cruel, and the simply unlucky. Deepa, there is certainly an aspect to American history where men of color have been seen as sexually sexual predators where white women are concerned. You know, we have the ugly history of Emmett Till, etc. And I don't know if that's overblowing what's happened to Aziz Ansari, or is that something we do have to kind of remind ourselves of?
You know, this Atlantic article that you mentioned, I find it to be extremely hypocritical, especially on that count. The fact, you know, this assumption that we need to protect Aziz Ansari because he is a South Asian American brown actor is something that I really don't understand. You know, brown actors, brown men should be held to the same standards, should be held to some amount of accountability that any other person should be. And secondly, you know, Anil Dash said this on Twitter, I think much better than I could say, but he talked about how, you know, in this particular article, using brown men as props to push forth a conservative feminism is actually not very flattering, and it's not helpful in any way. I would ask, you know, what about the brown men who aren't well off, who aren't on our television sets? What about men like Ravi Raghubir, and a South Asian American activist who was detained by ICE over the weekend? What about Srinivas Kuchibhotla, who was murdered in Kansas last year?
When come do we to their defense.
Right. When do we come to their defense? When do we stand up for them? So this whole kind of racialization around reputational harm to Ansari just, again, smacks of hypocrisy to me. And again, I think it takes away from the conversations and the dialogues we should be having with men and women, with each other in our relationships around consent, coercion, sexual control, and entitlement.
Let's see what Aziz Ansari's response was to this article. I'm sure he's, you know, being bombarded right now by all of the media coverage. And over a day after the article came out, he issued a very brief statement. He said, in September of last year, I met a woman at a party. We exchanged numbers, we texted back and forth, and eventually went on a date. We went out to dinner, and afterwards we ended up engaging in sexual activity, which by all indications was completely consensual. The next day I got a text from her saying that although, quote, it may have seemed okay, upon further reflection, she felt uncomfortable. It was true that everything did seem okay to me. So when I heard that it was not the case for her, I was surprised and concerned. I took her words to heart and responded privately after taking the time to process what she had said. I continue to support the movement that is happening in our culture. It is necessary and long overdue. This is the statement Aziz Ansari published in response. And he did, by the way, go to the Golden Globe wearing the Time's Up pin that a few men were wearing. What do you make of this response?
Well, you know, I want to really think about how we can hold Aziz Ansari to that standard of his support for Time's Up and Me Too. How is he actually going to parlay what has happened? How is he going to parlay the statement and the accolades that he's received into actually shedding more light on this movement? That, I think, is the type of conversation that we need to be moving towards. But again, we seem to be stuck in thinking about, well, what harm has happened to him, right? And why didn't she do this or X or Y. So how do we get beyond these binaries to actually have the conversation we should be having in our homes and our relationships and our schools, campuses, is really where I think we should be heading. And also looking at the Me Too movement in a much broader way. It isn't a movement, at least as far as I understand it, that is just focused on sort of like the four corners, right? That it has to rise to the level of sexual violence or rape in order for us to be outraged, in order for us to care. It's a much bigger movement than that because it affects sexual dynamics, which actually range across the spectrum, whether it's in dating, whether it's in marriages, whether it's in encounters such as the one that Grace recounted, or in what we've seen in the Hollywood actresses that have spoken up. So I think we need to look at how this movement can be broadened, and in particular, look at how we can center women of color who are working as domestic workers, as hotel workers, home care workers, whose voices we're not hearing yet, right? When can we and how can we make sure that those are lifted up and amplified so that in all sectors and in all situations, we're having the conversations that we need to have and the changes that need to be made?
I think, Deepa, one of the aspects of this story about Aziz Ansari that has disappointed many women, including myself to an extent, is that we wanted to think of Aziz Ansari as one of the good guys, right? Because he addresses the issue of sexual harassment and assault in his show, Master of None, where he worked with a TV co-host who was accused by multiple women of harassing them unethically, and he chose to be on the right side. His fictional persona did the right thing. In words, he has been one of the few men in Hollywood to kind of say, I'm a woke feminist. And then when we hear something like this, we think, if Aziz Ansari can't pass the basic test of treating women with humanity, who can? We're basically, you know, like it seems as though there could be no men who could really be true allies. If Aziz Ansari is flawed, all men are flawed.
I don't know that, you know, we should hold him to that kind of he's even held to that bar, but you know, but I think what we can also say about this is that this particular encounter is, again, as I mentioned at the beginning, very familiar to a lot of people, right? You know, there have been some articles that talk about how Aziz Ansari in some way, and many men like him who, as you said, say that they're woke feminists, have still been socialized in a rape culture, right? Where there are messages that men receive about their entitlement to the bodies of women, their entitlement to sex. And those messages are messages that that men and women receive all the time. So again, what this can open us up for is that deeper discussion, that deeper conversation about what are these messages? What does agency look like? What are the, you know, histories and circumstances that women might be facing? What are the power, the questions they're thinking about in terms of power and safety in situations like these? So I hope that that's where we'll get with this particular situation, rather than being stuck in, well, he didn't do anything wrong, she should have done this, and right, he's a brashster, like you said.
Well, one of the people who's sort of bringing up what she should have or shouldn't have done in the media is Ashley Banfield, a former CNN anchor. She became famous for reading the letter by the Stanford rape victim, the woman who was Brock Turner's rape victim, on the air, and she issued an open letter to Grace where she essentially said, you had a bad date. She said, you know, you, by your own admission, this wasn't sexual assault, because if it was sexual assault, you should go to the police right now. You know, it's sort of, of course, running along familiar lines. She's echoing what some women are saying, and of course men are saying, but even some women who are saying they are part of the hashtag MeToo movement. And she's sort of saying Grace is ruining it for us, because now women may not be taken as seriously when they, you know, accuse somebody of something predatory.
Right. And I don't think that has to be the case at all. You know, I think that to say that this one account undermines the entire movement is going a little bit too far. I think it's important to see what happened to Grace, what she recounts, as part of the broader spectrum of issues that the Me Too movement is trying to address, rather than see it as something that could take away from the credibility of women who this particular person is talking about. Right. And so for all of us, right, I think that this is that opportunity to look at at how broad we think of when we think of the Me Too movement. And for South Asians in particular, I would also say that it is important for us to have these discussions within our own communities and our own families. We are not having these discussions and conversations enough. I was reflecting on the fact, Sonali, that just this weekend, that there was a group of people who came together in Richmond Hill in Queens over the murder of Stacey Singh, an Indo-Caribbean woman, on New Year's Day by her husband in a case of domestic violence. Right? These are the issues: domestic violence, power imbalances, consent and coercion in dating, agency. These are the questions and conversations that we should be having with young people, with our own families. And I'm hoping that Aziz Ansari's situation, right, will prompt more South Asian Americans to have those conversations because of who he is and because they feel somewhat connected in some way to what has happened.
And in many ways, I think it is prompting a conversation. Right? I mean, the fact that this piece came out, whether or not one thinks these issues should be emerging in the media, the fact is that this piece on babe.net, whether or not one thinks it was responsible journalism or not, has been prompting men and women to have conversations about sexual encounters, about sexual cultures, about how we treat one another in our intimate relations, what is expected of women, what is expected of men. And that can only be a good thing, right?
I think it can be a good thing if we make that choice. If we kind of don't let ourselves get distracted by some of these articles and these quote debates that have been happening about what she should have done and whether it was assault or not, whether it was legal or not.
And many of those concerns sound exactly like the kinds of responses that you hear people who are who defend rapists, unfortunately.
Well, I mean, the scrutiny that is placed on a woman's actions, right, when she speaks about her experiences, I think is really telling as compared to when people are talking about Aziz Ansari, right? They're focused more really on whether he was a mind reader or not, as a New York Times or he says, right, or his reputational harm. I think that his reputation will end up being fine, you know? So let's actually move away from these divisive narratives and this divisive rhetoric and actually have the productive conversations that we need to be having around exactly what you said, sexual culture, sexual dynamics, power, and the messages that men and women receive. Yeah.
There is a related story about diversity in Hollywood that does exist, and the fact that there are so few Aziz Ansaris within which one can, you know, sort of place one's hopes, immigrant hopes and dreams on, that we need a bigger diversity in Hollywood so that he isn't one of the very, very few on which people feel, you know, the reputation of the community lies on his shoulders, right?
Well, you know, I'm always wary of that sort of representational politics, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at people in this administration like Ajit Pai or Nikki Haley or Seema Verma. And, you know, really, I don't think it's ever a good idea to think that people in politics or people in entertainment who might be from similar backgrounds are necessarily going to, quote, represent our communities in the right way, right? Or the ways that we need. So I don't know that I totally agree that there should be more diversity in Hollywood and entertainment and in every single sector. But I think it's also incumbent upon us to hold those folks who are in those positions accountable. And I think that's a little bit of what we're seeing today when it comes to Aziz Ansari.
Finally, Deepa, I'm so glad you brought up the story of Ravi Rugbeer. Here on the West Coast in California, where this program is produced, he is not as well known as he is on the East Coast. But do tell us a little bit about what happened to him and you know, the fact that he deserves more solidarity than Aziz Ansari.
Right. So Ravi Rugbeer is a longtime immigrant rights activist in the New York City area. And unfortunately, he has been detained and picked up by ICE over the weekend because of his status. There was a very large demonstration in New York City over the weekend, on the day that he was picked up, actually, and since then, to show solidarity and support for him. And for those who are interested in learning more, please look up information about Ravi Rugbeer. You can find it online. You can find it at organizations like SALT, SALT, SAALT.org, the New York Immigration Coalition in New York City, to figure out how you can support him and making sure that he is released from detention as quickly as possible.
We'll post those links from our website later today. Deepa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Deepa Iyer, a South Asian American activist who works and writes on race, immigration, and the post 9/11 backlash. Her first book is entitled We Too Sing America. She hosts a monthly podcast called Solidarity Is This. We've been discussing the article on babe.net about a woman's experience with Aziz Ansari. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.